Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mock Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is Friday at long last. It is the 20th of August, 2021. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. And as always on Friday, I have with me Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, I'm back again. Happy Friday, everyone.
Well, it was until they found out you're back on the show because we're still doing Security Friday.
Right.
But we're going to start with some good news today. So first, we have a PSA that I am characterizing as good news, and we'll get into that in a minute. But it has to do with GitHub.
Yes, I agree. I think this is good news because it's increased security for a certain website, and that website is GitHub. So they announced earlier this week that they are no longer accepting regular plain old passwords. People with these accounts have to use some method of two-factor authentication instead.
Mm-hmm.
And you can use multiple different kinds of 2FA. You can use a hardware security key, like from Yubico. Actually, mm-hmm. I think GitHub and Yubico are partnering on this.
They are, and yes. I did see that.
Okay. And then you can also just use the TOTP one-time passcode in an app like a password manager, like 1Password or Bitwarden supports that. Mm-hmm. Authy, Google Authenticator, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, so Microsoft Authenticator. There's loads of authenticator options out there if you have that option available to you. So the first thing to know is that basically this means just passwords is the part that they're ending. They said in December, last year in December, 4 years ago in December, they said that starting in August, they will no longer accept only passwords. So now two-factor minimum. So a personal access token, like a YubiKey, an SSH key. So if you don't know what that is, you don't have to worry about it. You have a lot of other options. But you may need an SSH key for certain operations. You can also use OAuth, which is like Google Authenticator, that sort of thing, or a GitHub app installation token. So all of these are easy to set up if you need them. And then one of the interesting things that I found in their blog post about it was here are all the reasons it's a good idea. So like you and I just talked about, like, yes, it's a good idea to have better security on your software because that's what GitHub is for. And one of the things that I liked about, like, they'll even do the we text you a code and that's fine. They say we really don't want to, so do something else, which I appreciate.
Uh-huh.
Virtual security keys, like if you're using Face ID or Touch ID, you can use that as your second factor. So, you know, as I'm fond of saying, just give it the finger and, you know, it'll be fine. All of those things are good. And then if you really are interested in trying out a YubiKey, GitHub has some that they've teamed up with Yubico to brand with USB-C connection, so you can plug it into your laptop, and that sort of eliminates the password piece for you. You just plug that in and it's like, oh, you've got the YubiKey, we're good. If you were interested in dipping a toe in the hardware key space, this might be a good way to do it if you have a GitHub account. But otherwise, like, it's a good idea, and this is just sort of one of those things that is better for everybody. So and remember, coming to iOS is the ability to manage those TOTP codes as part of the iCloud Keychain Manager. So if you're not quite there yet,
iOS 15,
you can make sure that it's in beta now. If you want to set up the public beta and try this out, you can. And it's something that's available, which I think is very handy. So good news for everybody. Your software is going to be a little more secure. So there you go. Shout out to Nate. Whenever we talk about securing your stuff, this is the thing that I think of because he said we should rename today Secure Your Stuff Friday. But he used a word I don't want to have to edit. So I'm going to just say it was Secure Your Stuff Friday. So hi, Nate. We also have a little bit more good news, which is that somebody who suffered it, who had a data breach, got fined for it. We finally saw a consequence.
Yes, this is a follow-up to some old news.
Yes.
So in 2018, Pearson, which makes software for schools and universities, colleges, their Ames Web 1.0 software, it had a data breach, and it leaked usernames, passwords, birth dates, email addresses, administrator login credentials from over 13,000 schools and universities were leaked, and they say millions of students were affected.
Of course they were.
Right. So the SEC had sued Pearson because they say they made misleading statements and omissions over the data breach.
Okay.
So as I wrote this up, they say, let's see. The SEC says Pearson had referred to the breach as a hypothetical risk even after it already occurred.
Wow.
And then in yeah, this was part of their July 2019 report to investors, calling it it's okay. And then in a media statement around that time, they said the breach may include birth dates and email addresses, but internally it knew such data had already been leaked.
Wonderful.
And they said yeah, so going further, they said they had strict protections in place, but they didn't patch the software vulnerability for 6 months after the breach.
Goodness sakes. All right.
So in this, they are settling with the SEC. They are not like denying any of these accusations.
No.
But
they're settling instead of admitting, basically, which is not great. So
yeah,
I was
it's a $1 million settlement.
I was initially excited to hear that somebody who did dumb stuff with people's data was going to suffer a consequence. But it turns out it's not that they did something dumb with people's data that they're suffering the consequence for. It's how hard they lied about it. So I'm glad that got caught, too. But, you know, I don't feel all that great about it because I really wanted it to be a consequence for doing dumb stuff. But sadly, no.
I mean, for me, it's the money. You know, these huge companies, they have no problem paying $1 million. That's just the cost of doing business to them.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the rest of it is like, it's $1 million. You know, we'll skip break room coffee for a couple of months. It'll be fine, you know? And yeah, so that's the other part of that. That's disappointing. And speaking of disappointing news, since we've kicked off this week in data breaches, we have another one to tell you about. And if this sounds familiar, I'm not pulling tape from a previous episode of the show. We don't record on tape, but it's a long story. This isn't just a clip from a previous episode. This is a brand new and exciting data breach. Right, Andrew?
A new data breach, the latest. We'll talk about that later, like you said. But first, this is a new data breach from T-Mobile. A person in some kind of online forum was offering this data for sale.
Okay.
At first, they claimed it came from T-Mobile servers. A couple days afterward, T-Mobile, you know, they investigated and they confirmed there was a breach. And it's a bad one because the data that was leaked includes hold on to your seat, folks. Okay.
Buckle
up. Social security numbers, phone numbers, names, physical addresses, unique IMEI numbers, which are like a unique number assigned to your device.
Yeah.
Driver license information. And actually, I think that might be it.
Yeah.
But it's also bad because it doesn't just affect current T-Mobile customers. It's let me see if T-Mobile actually mentioned that.
They said 40 million records of former or prospective customers who previously applied for credit with T-Mobile. So financial information. So like that part's good. It didn't get anybody's credit card. It didn't get anybody's payment information. But now that you have somebody's date of birth, social security number, and driver's license number, you can go set up your own fake payment information for that person. So, you know, not the best news, but like it could have been a tiny bit worse. I guess.
So the 40 million records, that was just even if you were interested in signing up with T-Mobile and you didn't really, you know, complete the transaction, but they have some kind of data anyway.
Or they said but, no, but they don't say how far back the records go. So like if you tried to sign up for T-Mobile in the last year, or is it 5 years, or is it 10? Like, we don't know.
Right. And for current T-Mobile customers, they specifically mentioned T-Mobile postpaid customers. Mm-hmm. 7.8 million records were for these customers, who, you know, active ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As kind of a like small little we're sorry deal, they are offering 2 years of free identity protection services to people with McAfee's ID theft protection service.
Okay.
And of course, for postpaid customers, they recommend you change your PIN by going online with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we were alluding to earlier is that T-Mobile has had a lot of data breaches.
Yeah.
So I'm pulling these numbers from a website called RochesterFirst.com. They write they had a data breach in November 2019, August 2018. They had one in 2015, but that wasn't really T-Mobile's fault. That was from the Experian data breach, in which 15 million T-Mobile customers were affected.
Mm-hmm. Now, another thing I do want to point out, and you know, the snark in me says, well, obviously they've been through this enough times that this is what they did. But I'm going to link to it in the show notes. There's actually a nice web page that they put up, and they mentioned it in like the official statement from T-Mobile that there was going to be this unique web page, and they put it up, data breach 2021, and it says right at the top, what happened, here's what happened, here's the information that was involved, and here's what we're doing. And then there's a list of things about what you can do. So here you can sign up for this, the McAfee ID theft protection you talked about. Here's how you can change your PIN. Here's how you can log in and change your password. Here are the things you can do to protect your account. And they have like all of these tiles, and they have their phone number at the bottom, really big if you want to talk to customer care. So I do appreciate that they've been at least very upfront about this. So this is sort of the opposite of the Pearson situation we just discussed.
So
I do appreciate they're like, this is what's up. This is what we did. This is how it's working. And here, like, here's what we're doing. Here's what you can do. And so, like, I wish more places would do this. And I hope, I hope everyone takes this page out of T-Mobile's book, because, it's a good page. Here's what's up. And I liked that they added the links to everything, changing your password, adding something called account takeover protection. I'm gonna add this as a bonus tip, because this is a thing that you can sort of do in a lot of places. For one thing and another, and you may want to ask specifically about it. I know AT&T has this. I think Verizon has this, and I think Comcast, I think, also has this, which is at least like an additional, and I don't know if it's Comcast Mobile. I just know about the TV because I have it set up for my cable TV account, cable and internet. You can set up like an additional PIN. So it's sort of like having two-factor on the phone. So like you call them and you go, hi, I say I'm Kelly, and I say this is my address, and I say I have an Xfinity account, and they go, okay, there's additional security on the account. Can you tell me what that is? And then I have to give it to them. So that's a thing that you can do. Comcast has that. Like I said, AT&T has this. T-Mobile has this. They have something called account takeover protection, and it's free. Uh-huh. All of these are free. I'm not paying anything for any of this. This is a free service, and they have something that will help protect from an unauthorized user porting out your phone. So they have that, and then they like a lot of places will have, I can set up an additional layer of security, like I have a PIN, or we're going to text a code to the phone number on the account, you have to read it to me. So that's one of the things that you can do to sort of mitigate some of that stuff. It can be helpful, and sometimes just having that on there can make it easier for, it's one of those things that like only takes a second if you actually have to call, but the rest of the time, if somebody's trying to get into your account or something, it's completely thwarting them. And it's a very easy thing to set up most of the time. So if you just call and ask, is there any way I can set up an additional layer of security or a personal PIN? That kind of stuff usually will be a thing that you can set up, takes a few minutes to set up, and then like you're secure on it forever. You just need to make sure if anyone else calls Comcast or the phone company or whatever from your house, that they know what that number is as well. And, you know, save it in your password manager or whatever. But that's one of the things that can sometimes help with that kind of stuff. So,
yeah. So actually, one last thing. I didn't see this before. Uh-huh. So I mentioned postpaid customers before. They also have information about prepaid customers. And yes, in this case, they say about 850,000 prepaid customers were affected. The information that was leaked for those people were names, phone numbers, and account PINs. They say they already proactively resettled the PINs and are notifying these customers. And they also mention no Metro by T-Mobile, former Sprint prepaid, or Boost customers were affected. Yeah. Or at least had their names or PINs exposed.
Yeah, so... so if you were worried about that piece of it, there you go. But you may also want to keep a little bit of, if you ever tried or considered having a T-Mobile account, then you may want to keep an eye on all your stuff for the short term. And that's actually our practical tip for today is we've given all of these before. Again, if it sounds like a clip show, I apologize. But we're going to talk about some different stuff. So today's practical tip is easy ways that you can mitigate some of that stuff. And I gave you one of them already by setting up an additional PIN or extra authentication with places that you regularly pay bills. Another thing that you can do is the one that Andrew really likes, which is privacy.com, which sort of gives you disposable credit card numbers, so to speak.
Yeah, that's a really cool service. I actually don't use it a lot anymore, but it's still a great service and I recommend it. You sign up for an account, you link your bank account to it, and then from there you can generate pretty much unlimited virtual cards, which is great because it offers you, there are different controls you can do with it. Like you can lock a card so that it can only be used at, you know, Amazon or Apple, for example, or you can create one-time burner cards, or you can also set a spending limit for a card too. So if you maybe only want this card to have, I don't know, be able to spend $20 at any given time, you can also do that too. So there's a lot of options.
The spending limit bit is super handy. Like if you normally pay a bill with this card, say, you know, and all of a sudden somebody wants to charge way more to it, then you can find that out pretty easily. I will point out another handy thing is that the Apple Card, if that's a thing for you, does offer the same sort of, I use this number with my whatever, and you can request a new number. If it seems like something funny is going on with the one that you have, you can swap that out pretty easily. Obviously, you don't necessarily want to do that if you have the physical one that you use places. But if you mostly use it online and don't have to worry about the rest of it, you can always just go, yeah, give me a new number, and then, you know, move on with your day. So that one's kind of handy. Another thing that you can do that we've talked about before is not store your card information with any services. So don't store it at Amazon. Don't store it at Crazy Eddie's House of Cables or, you know, whatever, like wherever it is that you're shopping. With Apple, if you're paying for something on your phone and you don't have Apple Pay as an option, one of the things you can do in the credit card field is scan your credit card. So you can just take a picture and it'll read the number and everything for you, and then you don't have to worry about it. So that can be pretty easy. You can save your credit card in a password manager if you use one. You can always just store it there, and it's a couple of clicks to fill it in. And I do that most places, basically, because I don't want to have it stored because I don't want anybody else to get a hold of it. Because there was a point where I was getting a new credit card like every 3 months or something because I would get a letter that was like, hi, your number's been in a data breach. We have to send you a new credit card. So I just quit storing it anywhere, and that seems to have helped some. So yay. Yeah. So if you don't have to, you can, you know, don't save your payment information. And that's another way that you can sort of keep that stuff from being true. I've also heard people talk about, you know, having a Facebook birthday and things like that, so that like the date that is publicly associated with you is not actually your birthday. So if people try to sign up for stuff, like they're using wrong data. So you can you can always try something like that. You know, and then you get two, right? Because like then everybody on Facebook wishes you a happy birthday on some day that is not actually your birthday. So surprise. And another, like some of the other, so these are just some of the basic things that you can do to sort of help mitigate some of these things. Now, you know, unique passwords, using a password manager so that that stuff happens. We talked about two-factor. So Andrew, is there anything I missed in trying to help keep your stuff safe?
Another thing that we've talked about on the show before is email aliases.
Yes.
So these it's a similar concept to these virtual cards. You can generate, like disposable email addresses for services, or even if they're not disposable, using one email address mm-hmm. for each service you use, or maybe one for 10 or whatever.
Yeah.
An app I've talked about before is called Simple Login. And mm-hmm. then, another thing coming in iOS 15 is Apple has this service with iCloud called Hide My Email. So that can also generate these aliases for you.
Oh, good stuff. If you have questions about any of these services, if there's something you'd like for us to explain, if you haven't been a longtime listener and you want to hear more about any of these, you can always let us know. Observations@MacObserver.com, TMO Daily on Twitter, or leave comments in the show notes. Thank you, Andrew, for being here today. I hope everybody has a great weekend. I will talk to all of you on Monday. In the meantime, be excellent to each other. Let's be careful out there.